Now, if you will, we are headed for a series of messages on the Ten Commandments. And I have titled this series of messages, Ten Profound Commanding Words. And in our first message, we talked about the amazing fact that God speaks to us. The word indicates communication. God has created man with the ability to communicate. Now, the last time we checked in our church, we had 20 primary languages among our people here. But you speak languages, and each language has words. And those words have meaning to those who understand the language. Jesus Christ is called the Word. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Literally, God was the Word. Now, John 1, when he says, in the beginning was the Word, that means that God is, among other things, a communicating God. And we know things about Him, we know who He is, things we could never on our own discover. He tells us. That is amazing to me that He would waste His time on people that don't want to listen. How many of you the first time you heard the gospel were just say, hallelujah, somebody's got a message from God for me? Maybe one or two of us had open hearts. When you're a child, you do. But later on in life, it generally is not that way. So God is speaking to us. And we talked about the Hebrew word, dabar, which means to speak, declare, converse, command, promise, warn, threaten, etc. And it means it's spoken by the Lord. So we have the Ten Commandments. These are known as commandments because in the Old Testament, the word commandment is attached to these ten words. But they are called the ten words, and then they are further explained as ten commandments, if you please. So we call them the Ten Commandments. Almost everybody knows there is such a thing. The amazing thing is, if you were to ask somebody, do you hope to go to heaven? Oh, yeah. Well, how do you hope to go to heaven? Well, keep the commandments. Well, would you please tell me what they are? And at that point, you run into a blank wall. How many, is there anybody here tonight that could quote the Ten Commandments? All ten. One, I could not do it. Two, I could figure out what they are. Thou shalt not create any graven image, and thou shalt not or make any graven image, and so on. I could figure them all out, but I could not quote the text. I've never memorized this text of the Ten Commandments. Would that every young person and child, however, did memorize the Ten Commandments. Their lives would be different under the impact of such words as these. Now, I need to move along. I have some preliminary material that I want us to look at. But turn to Exodus 20 for just a moment, if you will. And you probably in your mind should just put a little label in your mind, Ten Commandments, Exodus 20. Because that is one of the main, one of the more important chapters of all of the Word of God is Exodus 20. Exodus 20. And here we have the Ten Commandments, well, the Ten Words. We have the beginning with the first verse, God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Commandment number one, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And by the way, we're going to go through these one at a time and explain their moral and ethical significance and the applications for the modern day in which we live. We're going to go there when we get done with the introductory material. Commandment one, thou shalt have no other gods before me, and that includes not making any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth, which also includes not bowing down to them nor serving them. I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. All right, commandment number two. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Commandment number three, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now this is explained. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. The seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For, because in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. All right, how many commands is that? Three. All right, number four. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. That's how many? Four. All right, number five. Thou shalt not kill. Literally, thou shalt do no murder. Number six, thou shalt not commit adultery. Number seven, thou shalt not steal. Number eight, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Is that number eight? That's number nine. Number ten, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings, the noise of the trumpet, the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said to Moses, speak thou with us. We will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we what? Die. This is quite a frightening scene. Moses said unto the people, fear not. Fear not. You don't need to be afraid. Why? God has come to prove you that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not. And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. Now go back to chapter 19 and verse number 1. We're going to see the setting, the setting in which these words are given. This gives us the background. Exodus 19, verse number 1. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt. How long had they been out of Egypt? How long in the wilderness? 3 months. 3 months. In the third month, or two months and some days. In the third month, when the children of Israel had gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai, for they were departed from Rephidim, and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness. There Israel camped before the mount, and Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called him, Yahweh called him out of the mountain, saying, thus shalt thou say unto the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. You shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. Now, here, this is preliminary to the words that we read in chapter number 20. This is very interesting. Who is talking here? The Creator is talking. The maker of heaven and earth, the one who had brought all of these people into existence. And I read this thing with amazement. It would seem that how many of you, if you make something, you want it to do what you made it to do? Huh? You want it to serve you because you made it for yourself. And if it wants to do something on its own, you don't like that. Because you made it for yourself. Correct? And yet God has made us, and we assume that he should have no right to tell us how to function. You get it? Do you get it? And it's amazing here. And this word command, it's very, very interesting. I've been reading in the Psalms. And God commands blessing. God commands his covenant. God commanded the creation in the first place. And it's very, very interesting when you look at these commandments, the attitudes that people have toward them in our churches today, let alone out in a pagan society, let alone in the environmental culture out there in academia. It's absolutely amazing to me, the attitude. God says, this is what I want you to do or not do. Live this way, do this. And with every command, he always issues a promise or a statement of the outcome. Now, we need to get this clear in our minds. It is not circumstances that determine the outcome. It is what God says that determines the final outcome of everything. The Word of God, the law of God, is the great governor. It governs, it determines the outcome of everything, period, end of statement. God says, thou shalt not kill. Anybody that kills is in trouble. What God says is the great governor. Now, it doesn't matter whether you acknowledge what he says. It does not matter whether you like what he says. It does not matter whether you agree with what he says. The Word of God is the great governor. It determines the final outcome of every issue of life. Now, notice in verse 5, we're in chapter 19 and verse 5. Now, therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, you shall be a peculiar, that is a special treasure unto me above all people. For all the earth is mine. You shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And I will paraphrase that. Now, if you will indeed hear and heed the sound of my voice and carefully and attentively observe and guard my agreement, that is my pact, my covenant, you shall become my personal possession among all peoples, because all of the earth is mine. Obey my voice means to listen to hearken. How many of you parents wish your children would listen to you? How many of you children love to listen to your parents? I got no takers on that one. If you will obey my voice, if you will hear, hearken, listen, pay attention, keep my covenant, that means to watch, observe, or heed, what will be the outcome? You will become a special personal possession of mine. How many of you get upset? How many of you have gotten upset at siblings because you thought they were getting more of your parents' affection than you? This is a real issue among children. All children are born with a desire for their parents' affection and acceptance. Yes or no? Children love and want, desire and need the acceptance and the affection of their parents. And God says, if you simply will listen to me and pay attention and heed what I say, you will become my personal treasure. You will have a relationship with me that anybody, and if I can say this carefully, anybody in his right mind would want to have. You see, your closeness to God doesn't depend on how much ability you have. It does not depend on how gifted you are. It does not depend on how much you have. It does not depend on how much many resources you have. It doesn't depend on your station in life. It doesn't depend on your background. It depends on your willingness to love God. Everyone, regardless of age, regardless of station in life, regardless of advantages, disadvantages, resources, regardless, every individual has this marvelous, I think this is good stuff, this amazing privilege of drawing near to God and being his own personal possession, regarded by him in that light. See, being a Christian is more than just getting saved from death and hell and judgment. It goes way beyond that. God said, look, I set the whole thing up. And if you'll simply do it my way, And you'll simply recognize your relationship to me as my creature whom I made for my pleasures and my purposes. If you will simply acknowledge this, and this is how you acknowledge it, I'll give you these 10 words. If you will acknowledge this, give heed to this, pay attention to this, you will be my own special personal treasure. In other words, there isn't anything except personal choice that keeps us away from God. There is a closeness. There is a wonder. There is a blessedness. There is a joy in relationship with God that is available without exception to everyone. And it is dependent on our response to what God has to say. This amazes me that God would do this. You'll be my special treasure, a kingdom of priests. In other words, you will become men and women who literally bring other men to God in your life. You will be a holy nation, a nation of integrity. So, why did God give these things? What did God want for them? What did God want from them? Why did He give these 10 words? Look at verse number 20 again in chapter 20. Go to chapter 20 again. And look, please, at verse number 20. Moses said unto the people, "Fear not, for God is come to prove you, that His fear may be before your faces, that you sin not." Let me give you my paraphrase of this. Moses said, "Do not fear, because God has come." The emphasis is God has come to you. As if God is seeking you out. You may not know who He is. You may not have met Him, but He is coming to you. Now, our family has a little spat going on. You see, my brother John, he visited me today. And I visit him. But I have a brother and sister to whose houses I have been, and they haven't reciprocated and been to my house. It's their turn to come to me. But this is amazing. I have come to you. I have come to you in order to put you to the test so that the fear of God might be right in front of you, right before you, and so that you might not sin. Now, the word sin here means to miss the mark. God says, "I do not want you to blow your life. I don't want you to waste it. I don't want you to throw it away. I don't want you to miss the mark. I just don't want you to do that." So He wanted to thoroughly examine the genuineness of their love for Him. Love for Him is one of our deepest human needs. Now, hear me. If I were to come down in there and walk through the pews tonight and I were to question you, what is the greatest need that you have as an individual? Well, I need money. Well, I need healing. Well, I need... But did you know that basically, if you want to get to the bottom line, the greatest human need is a love for God. And if that need is met in your life is transformed in every other dimension of life. Every dynamic of life, every dimension of life is totally transformed by that love of God in our hearts. The physical illness, the stress, the financial needs, all of these things take on a totally different meaning when we love God. Our relationship to every problem in life, every difficulty in life, every stress in life is totally different when we have this relationship with God. Can you see this? Our greatest need is to love God. That's our greatest need. We think, if only I had, or if only this happened to me. I feel to be such a needy person. If only this, if only that. Now, you don't live there, do you? Hello? But it is amazing that love for God is a fountain of life that dramatically changes all of life. Years ago, I think probably 15 years ago, and I don't know who in the world invented this thing, probably Bill Hybels in Chicago, the suburbs of Chicago popularized it. But they talked about needs-oriented preaching. What we need to do is find out what the needs of people are. I have needs to know how to relate to my mate. I have needs to know how to deal with my finances. I have needs to know how to deal with these emotional things in my life. Well, those are all areas where we do have legitimate needs. But what is the greatest need? The greatest need is knowing and loving God. That's the greatest need. And the problem is, you can go through formulas on how to put your marriage together. But without loving God, that marriage does not have the kind of significance it needs to have, and you will never put it together right without loving God. Yes or no? You have financial needs. That's a genuine need. But you won't do the right thing with your money unless you love God. Your financial house will not be properly arranged and in order unless you love God. See? So, the greatest human need that we have is knowing and loving God. And that needs to be our focus of life. God said, I'm giving you these commandments because you need to have a way by which you can measure the genuineness of your love for me. See? This will be a measure, a way you can measure that, and Christians need that. This is not designed for condemnation. We'll deal with that next Sunday morning, Lord willing. The law is no good to make us righteous. That's not what it's designed to do. It's designed to test the genuineness of our love for God and for man. This is something all of us desperately need. All of our life, our character, come out of this kind of thing. All of our actions. Secondly, to cause them to fear God. What in the world does it mean to fear God? Do you remember how I've defined the fear of God for you? And I hope I don't get so technical I lose you here. But the fear of God is a two-sided proposition. It's a coin with two different sides. The fear of God, number one, is the absolute moral certainty that God will judge and destroy everything that's wrong. Now, how many of you believe that with all your heart? You see wickedness around you and you wonder, why does God allow it? But the fear of God tells you that God will not fail. It doesn't matter what man knows, what man sees, how man views all of this. God will, with moral certainty, judge and destroy everything that is wrong. That's the fear of God. Now, the other side of that coin is this, and hear me. This is what keeps us going as Christians. The other side of that coin is that the fear of God is the moral certainty that without fail, God will reward and establish everything that is right. See? And the law of God is given to us so that we might fear Him, that is, we might live in moral certainty of the outcome of every ethical and moral question. Thou shalt not commit adultery. We live in moral certainty that God will judge and destroy immorality. We live in moral certainty if we do what is right, that God will reward and establish it. Living in the fear of God is not living in a state of terror. It is living in a state of utter confidence that the outcome of everything is measured by God's law. As sure as we are alive, our hearts are beating, we're breathing. As sure as all of this is, as we are, we have life tonight, we can hear the sound of voice. Our minds can think, as sure as we are living beings and alive and self-conscious, just as sure as that, God is going to ultimately judge and destroy everything that is wrong. And God's law gives us a heads up so we know what's wrong. What is God going to destroy? What is God going to honor and reward and establish? And it means that we can make choices in our lives that will make sure that at the end of everything, we've lost nothing and we have saved everything for the glory of God. The fear of God. First of all, we need to love God. Secondly, we need to fear God. That's a great need that we have. We have choices to make this week. Do I cheat on my taxes? Do I stay right? Do I take a little extra from work? Do I put the right numbers in on the number of hours I'm working for my employer? Or do I exaggerate a little bit? Do I cover up? Do I take extra time away? God will reward and establish everything that is right. It is a moral certainty. And God will establish. Reward and establish. Did I say that before? Which did I go first on that one? But anyway, we know the outcome of everything we do, and God's law tells us how we measure it. Okay? Now, is it a good thing to know that? Is it a good thing to know that? Now, any of you go swimming? Take a child in a swimming pool. Do you want a child to know what will cause them to drown? Do you want them to know what is safe, how to be safe? You know that if your child does certain things, your child will die. Yes or no? And every responsible parent wants to know what those things are. But we have a society today that says, I don't want to know what that is. Nobody has any business telling me what that is. Now, on the farm, we had gasoline. We put that into the tractors and into our trucks. And we had our own gasoline pump and gasoline tank. And I learned a little ditty. You remember my Bonnie lies over the ocean? Anybody heard that one? My Bonnie lies over the ocean. My Bonnie lies over the sea. My Bonnie lies over the ocean. Now bring back my Bonnie to me. My Bonnie looked into the gas tank, the height of its contents to see. She lit a small match to assist her. Now bring back my Bonnie to me. Now, there are certain things that it's good to know. What a terrible God to give us 10 commandments. Commandments. Isn't that awful? Commandments. Now, God says, do not fear. God has come to you to put you to the test, that the fear of Him might be right before you so that you may not sin. You may not miss the mark. Miss the mark. How many of you have gone on a trip and somebody sent you on the wrong road? How many of you discovered it a long time later? I mean, you missed the mark. My son was taking a long trip back east, and he was with a guy that didn't have much sense of direction, and they headed off 200 or 300 miles in the wrong direction. Now, may I ask you, does God do us a favor to tell us what that mark is and so we don't miss it? See? Who knows more about how life works? I appreciated the fact that Dr. Berghoff used my illustration. You know, you and I want to know what leads out in the right place and what does not lead out in the right place. I have a statement here. See if you think it's true or not. Those who love life must of necessity love the laws that govern life. You waking up for that? Those who love life must of necessity love the laws that govern life. So, God's law has a profound impact upon our lives. I want us to do one thing. We don't have Munch and Mingle, and I don't know how tired you are tonight, and are you warm? Are you cold? I think you're on the warm side, and these windows don't open over here. Huh? So, are you good for another 10 minutes? I think that the things that almost everybody misses is the goodness and greatness of God. Go to Psalm 1 for just a moment, if you will, please. Psalm 1. This is one of my favorite Psalms. Psalm 1. The beginning of this psalm is an explanation. Have you found it? Psalm 1. How blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, does not stand in the way of sinners, does not sit in the seat of the scornful. The word scornful there is scoffers. But his delight, he is thrilled. He is. How many of you, one of the great theological mysteries of life is why things that taste so good are so bad for you. How many of you will confess and be honest with me tonight that if I were to put a delicious, lovely, 3-scoop or 2-scoop Ghirardelli hot chocolate sundae in front of you with nuts and whipped cream and cherry, how many of you would be delighted? How many of you would have a troubled conscience, too? Why is it that God's motives are always supposed to be negative for everything that God does? I don't understand this. I really don't. His delight is in what? Now hear me. The law of God, do you know what the word govern means? To govern, preside over, control, rule. If you delight in the law of God, what you are delighting in literally is the governance of God. God's control. All right? His delight is in the governance of God. Now, it's given for us in writing as to how it works. That's the Ten Commandments. His delight. Delight! Delight! Ooh, my wife baked something today. My brother's favorite dessert. Oh, I can taste it yet. And there are 2 pieces left in the refrigerator when I get home. And it's a tart, a creamy tart. And it has fresh strawberries and it has whipped cream and whoo, la 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 la. To heaven and back 3 times we go when we eat this. Oh, it's just wonderful. How blessed is the man that has enough sense to really get excited about God's governance of this universe, this life and this world, and our personal lives. See? His delight! He loves it! He relishes it! He's excited about it! It's a wonderful thing to him! It's one of those bright spots in life. And it is a bright spot in life, dear people. His delight is in the law of the Lord. And in his law he meditates day and night. This governance of God is a part of his thinking. It's a part of his everyday life. Now, what about this fellow who delights in the law of God? He shall be like a tree. Now, do I look like a tree? Why does he use the word tree? He shall be like a tree. Well, of all the plants that you know, do you know a sturdier plant than a tree? You might, I thought, and I couldn't think of one. I don't know of a plant that is sturdier than a tree. Do you? I was up there, saw the General Sherman tree. Have you seen that thing? Is that the one that's 30 feet in diameter at the bottom? First, go up about 90 feet and the first branch comes out of it. It's about 9 feet in diameter. First branch. But it's a sturdy thing. It really is. Run into it and you'll regret it. He shall be like a tree. His life will be sturdy. His character will be sturdy and steady. This guy who has the fear of God, who lives in this moral certainty that God will judge and destroy everything wrong, will reward and establish everything that's right. He is sturdy. He has moral character that's sturdy. He does not move about. There's sturdiness of life and character. That's what the law of God does. Now tell me, what's so bad about that happening to a man or a woman? Are you Baptist? You're so legalistic.
you got this Ten Commandments. You're judging everybody in the world.
No, we're not judging everybody. We just learned that life goes a certain way whether you want it to or not. God is God whether you want Him to be or not. God determines the final outcome of everything whether you want Him to or not. And we learn how it's all going to come out in the end. And we believe in sturdiness of life and character. We don't believe in blowing about with every wind. Moving about just because somebody comes along and pretends he's God. Becomes enamored with his own intellect or his own philosophical whatever you have, machinations. Firmly planted by the rivers of water. Stability. The word planted here is firmly rooted. Firmly rooted. Firmly planted. Alongside the rivers of water. So, he's a stable individual. The law of God, the fear of God, the love of God stabilizes life. Now hear me. I don't care what your educational background is, and I believe in education. I don't care what your financial background is. I don't care what your anything in your background. I don't care how well you were raised, not raised. I don't care what your benefits and advantages are. None of this matters. Everybody has the ability to love God and fear God and to be stable and sturdy. Yes or no? Say, every believer. Say, stability. Planted alongside the rivers of water. This means abundant, unlimited divine resources. Because with every command of God, now hear me, you might write this down. God backs every one of His commands with His omnipotence. Did you hear that? God backs up every one of His commands with His omnipotence. Planted by the rivers of water, unlimited divine resources. God backs every one of His commands with His omnipotence. See? People that determine to do right are never left alone by God. Did you know that when I choose to do right, if God doesn't stand by me and support me, He literally dishonors Himself? God can't do that. Huh? Yes or no? God cannot do that. It's impossible for God to do that. Planted by the rivers of water. Now, a fruitful, productive life that yields its fruit, bringeth forth its fruit, yields its fruit in His season. What does fruit mean? It's productive, prosperous life, which is bringing blessing to others. Fruit has to do with something that benefits others in a very positive way. We live a fruitful life. We bring blessing and prosperity. It's a productive, prosperous life. I'm going to make a statement in a little bit about God's law. But listen, why did David say in the Psalms, "Oh, how love I thy law"? David never viewed the law of God as an instrument of personal condemnation. If he did, he never would have said he loved it. I don't love to be condemned. How about you? See? Now, I need to be measured. I need to be tested. There needs to be a standard by which I can measure my life. Yes or no? See? Here we have a productive, prosperous life bringing blessing to others. Notice in its season, that's at the proper time. This fruit bearing doesn't just happen all the time, and it doesn't happen when we think it should sometimes, but in its season, at the proper time. Leaf does not wither. That is, it's lively. It is growing. Life is not diminished by the law of God. The one that delights in God's law is living a life not diminished, lively and growing. His leaf will not, it does not wither. And he prospers in everything. All of life, hear me, all of life, regardless of whether people consider it to be positive or negative, all of life contributes to his joy because he's got the working of God in his life. And his wealth. The man who delights in God's law is a man or a woman with great treasure. Great treasure. And I'm concerned before we look at these commandments that we have the right approach. Why did God give them? What are they designed to do? They were given for our benefit. You know, there's a great health care debate, and let's not go into that tonight, but let's say this much. They find that they can, by following certain procedures in hospitals, they can dramatically decrease the number of infections, depending on how well they're doing those things in the first place. They are finding that there are certain procedures and checklists that if they will follow it, dramatically alter the effectiveness of the care that they're able to give at the hospital. I read that recently, and I assume it's true. And that would be true of any profession. It would be true of any area of life and service. Knowing about these things is the greatest benefit to mankind there is. Not knowing them is dangerous and deadly. Yes or no? So when God gives His law, do we love it? Do we welcome it? Are we willing to measure ourselves? Do we love God? Here is, well, let's clean it up very quickly here. I have several more pages of notes. We won't go to all of this, okay? But let me give you this much. God's law does not diminish life. It does not make life smaller. God's law never diminishes life. It enlarges life. Who is it in the scientific world that makes more progress? The one that knows the laws and works with them, or the one that decides anything he wants to do will go? How would you like somebody designing the airplane in which you fly who says, nobody's going to tell me how to do this? I've got my own ideas. How many of you would fly in his airplane? Why not? That guy's got to know all metallurgy. He's got to know chemistry. He's got to know electricity. He's got to know the computer world and chips and all. He's got to know all of these things. If he doesn't know these things, he'll design something that'll blow up, that'll fall out of the sky if it ever gets into the sky, and kill everybody on board. The man that really goes places is the man that discovers what the laws are, and he builds his life and work and occupation on those laws. God's law does not diminish life, it enlarges it. God's law does not restrict life, God broadens it. God's law does not stifle creativity, it makes creativity totally productive and worthwhile. God's law does not detract from the meaning of life, but rather gives the true meaning of life. And it ennobles, it makes noble, it elevates all of life. And when you come to the end of life, the people that I have known with the greatest wealth and treasure, and I'm not speaking in material terms, the people of greatest wealth and treasure whose lives have impacted more lives than anybody else are the ones who have, in a sense, restricted their life within the laws of God, and those laws of God, rather than restricting the outcome, have broadened the outcome dramatically. Proverbs 3:1. Turn there and let's clean it up. Why did God give us His law? Proverbs 3:1. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. All right, because I want you to have a little, restricted, meaningless life. Isn't that what it says? What does it say? My son, forget not my law. Let thine heart keep my commandments. For what? Number one, length of days. Number two, long life. Number three, peace. They will add to you. The word add. How about a Hebrew lesson tonight before we go home? Say with me, hifil. Hifil. Alright, this is a hifil verb. That means it is causative. It causes something to happen. It's a causative active verb. Length of days, years of life, and peace, they will cause to be added to you.